This is Morning Edition on KUT. I'm Jennifer Staten, and we want to help returning students and teachers get back into the swing of the school routine. So on this first day of school for the Austin Independent School District and many other Central Texas districts, here's a quick quiz. What's the oldest institution of higher education in Texas? So it turns out if you go back to its four original institutions that later merged into one, Southwestern University in Georgetown is actually the oldest. Now wait, before the phone starts ringing, we know Baylor is the oldest continually operating higher ed institution in the state. Classes begin at Southwestern today, and not long ago I talked with its president, Dr. Edward Berger, who is starting his second year on the job. Berger's a math scholar and an early adopter of using technology as a tool for education. He's also written and lectured a lot about education, creativity, failure, and thinking. I asked Berger why so much thought has gone into teaching people how to think. Berger's a math guy, so we talked about math.
From kindergarten and first grade and even into second grade, math is play. It's just joyful, looking for patterns, having fun, seeing connections and so forth. And it's wonderful. And then around second and third grade, it becomes an algorithm. It becomes a process and you have to follow these steps. And it's no longer a creative thing. It's a do it. So instead of making meaning of mathematical ideas, they're mindlessly mimicking mathematical steps. And the moment you get into that mindset, well, then you've taken all the joy and you've sucked all the creativity out of it. And so it takes years and years of a curriculum to suck the joy and the creativity out of math. And now it's our responsibility to bring that back in. Beyond mathematics, I would say that our educational system, literally all the way through undergraduate studies, has really focused on the content-specific elements rather than building and developing habits of thinking, habits of learning, and habits of the mind. And that's what's missing today.
So I want to ask a little bit about the intersection of education and technology, because you were an early adopter of that, continuing to practice now. But where are we headed with that?
It's a great question. And quite frankly, it's a billion-dollar question. I mean, there are companies out there and individuals that are you know, planning their fortunes, trying to basically, it's gambling on what might it look like. I don't know what it's going to look like, but the more fundamental question that we need to be asking is, what is the definition of education? If we're talking about using technology, whether it's video or whatever, using technology to educate people, my first response is, what is your definition of education? Because quite frankly, even if you draw a 25-mile radius circle around Southwestern University in Georgetown, you'll hit a lot of institutions of higher learning. And I would argue that they will have very different definitions of education. My definition of education is a life-changing, life-enriching experience that is designed to instill habits of living, habits of growing, and habits of thinking that will sustain you for a lifetime, to allow you to become literally your best self, to allow you to literally make up your own mind, to create yourself. If you define education as a credential, I want to get a diploma in order to get a degree, in order to get a starting salary, well, then in fact, I think a lot of these online things as they are now will serve that purpose of credentializing people. But if you want to have that life-changing experience, then I think we need to be a little more sensitive as to how technology will be impactful.
What would you say the definition of education in Texas is?
Well, I mean, the Texas culture and the Texas lore is, if you think about higher education, you think about really big universities and you think about football. So that's just kind of the mindset, because that's what we see on television. And certainly the really, really large schools are the schools that take up a lot of space. I'm not saying that those schools are not good or not bad or whatever, but I mean, it's just a fact. That's what people think. What I'd love for them to think about is, how is this investment of time and investment of money, quite frankly, going to pay off in terms of enriching my life? It's not just a credential, although I would argue that you can get a credential. And of course, I would argue that in the liberal arts, you get a richer education than you would if you're going to specialize into something very, very concrete and specific, especially in today's world where we're living in an age of obsolescence, where any fixed body of knowledge that you learn today, you know, is going to be obsolete literally in 6 months. The liberal arts mind is a mindset of teaching people to think about everything through all the different lenses of human thought through human history. But in Texas, if you use the phrase liberal arts, holy moly, that's not so good. Number one, liberal, that's not a good word. And arts, that sounds not good. And so one of the elements that I personally have to fight as the president of the number one small liberal arts college in the state is, how do we educate people as to, first of all, what education should mean, the promise of that, and what the liberal arts can offer?
Students who are coming to you now as freshmen have sort of come of their educational age a little bit in pretty tough economic times. I mean, if you go back to, say, 2008 to now when they were in, you know, middle school and high school, a lot of them probably watched their parents perhaps struggle, lose a job, or they themselves went through some financial tough times. And I think a lot of them are coming to higher ed with job sort of near the top of the list, if not the top of the list, or what is going to happen to me after school? What am I going to get? Is it harder to make that liberal arts case for these students who may be coming from a lot of differing economic scenarios?
It's a great question. And I think the answer is that it's not that difficult to make the case as long as you have the moment. It can't just be a soundbite. But as long as you have a moment to sit down with an individual and offer a vision for education and then offer a way out. Quite frankly, I'm a big fan of jobs. I've always had a job since I was a little kid. I've always been working. I'm a big fan of you know, doing as well as you can and prospering. But I'm also an even greater fan of finding your fire, finding your calling. It's not enough just to have a job. You have to find your vocation, what you're drawn to. And quite frankly, you might come about that in a very peculiar way. You might major in studio art and end up being a lawyer. You might major in English and become an accountant. When we think in a very directive, practical way, it really leads us astray. And what I say to students and I say to families, if you take an individual who's about to go on to college, and that individual at the age of 17 or 18 or whatever, however old they are, because we have a lot of non-traditional students too, if you can predict what you're going to be doing 4 years later and then beyond that 15 years later, you know, all the students come in, they want to be doctors and they want to be lawyers. If you can accurately predict what you're going to be thinking, what you're going to be doing, and how you're going to be living your life in 15 years, then you don't need an undergraduate education. The whole point of an undergraduate education is to mess things up, is to challenge the basic assumptions of who you are and how you fit into the world. And that's life-changing, which will allow you to find your fire.
And I asked Southwestern University President Dr. Edward Berger about the struggle many families face in paying for a child to find their fire. Hear his take about the cost of higher ed and more. You can hear the fuller interview at KUT.org.